For sure.
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 Welcome to another episode of For Sure, a 200-foot podcast. I'm Peter.
And I'm Jay. And Pete, I hope you're okay with this, but I brought two people. Is that all right?
I think so, yeah, sure. Like, who are they?
Well, they were kind of just sitting on the grass outside, and I was like, hey, I'm going to go do a podcast. Do you want to just come in and hang out and talk with us? And they said, sure. So one guy's name is, what's your name?
I'm Max Boltman. How you doing?
Hey, Max, how are you? And you are?
Craig Custance.
Craig Custance. Awesome. Okay, so we have a couple of vagrants coming in to talk to us today at the For Sure podcast. So, guys, this is being recorded in a hallowed space, and it's a very big honor to have a couple of randoms to record with us today. So just to give everybody a little bit of a background, Craig Custance is the editor-in-chief at The Athletic Detroit. Max is a contributor. Is that the first?
Oh, he's more than a contributor.
He's more than a contributor. I mean,
I can assure you that.
It's actually funny. Prior to this recording, my co-host Pete was like, hey, has Max done any podcasts before? And I actually kind of downplayed it because Max has been on everything, right?
I've done a few in the last couple of weeks. Yeah, I cover the Tigers and the Red Wings, and those are two teams that are both rebuilding. So there's a lot of podcasts about sort of their prospects, and I've seen a lot of those guys. So I've done the tour here.
The tour, and then Craig's just kind of a newbie, just kind of coming onto the scene, right? You know, like you've been in New York forever, so it's time to branch out and really solidify your tool shed, as it were.
Yes. I was about to take a drink of this iced tea that you provided. Am I supposed to talk at that point? Yes, it's. I'm going to plug Max here. Max is. We hired him at The Athletic. You were doing contributing in the summer. Yep. When did we officially hire you? In the fall?
November. Yeah.
November, and he has quickly become on the Tigers beat a must read, and I'm really looking forward to when he focuses attention to the Red Wings as soon as the Tigers season. Kind of, and we're pretty much at that point, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. That's
dies cool. down, and we're going to turn Max loose even more on the Red Wings than he's already done, and it's going to be great.
Yeah, and I, again, I'm excited to have the both of you here. This is, in my opinion, some pretty big gets. I don't know if Pete agrees. Do you agree, Pete, kind of?
Absolutely, 100%,
oh, good. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your blind trust. I appreciate that. Before we move further, I do have to make a shout-out to the people that made this possible. And no, I'm not talking about the Red Wings and the great players that will play before them. No, I'd like to talk to you about the lovely people at Miedma Asset Management. And they're in charge of the JoeSeats.com. They're currently in charge of selling those, what do you guys want to call these pieces of infinity, these relics, these icons of pure arena joy, because think of all of the moments that have been absorbed, the popcorn, the beer, and, you know, the farts, like everything that these seats have been able to contain for 40 years from this club. It's really phenomenal to actually let the fans of Detroit and those who actually just want another piece of history, because I know there are a lot of friends out there who really like to hold on to a piece of the arena. I myself am the son of a guy who has just bricks from old Comiskey Park and chairs from Tiger Stadium. So we know you're out there, and we know you want a piece of this history. So the lovely folks at thejoeseats.com asked me to give them a shout-out. They were very kind and very gracious enough to accommodate us here at Joe Louis Arena. We're sitting in the Joe Louis Arena locker room. We are sitting next to, not on top of, but next to where the Red Wing logo was on the ground. So we've just been stepping on it, actually, the last 4 hours. So take that. Hockey rituals. So yeah, big thanks to the JoeSeats.com. They're also having an auction in September, so go to JoeSeats.com to check out more information on that. There's a bunch of other things that have yet to be removed as it currently stands, as Craig, Max, and myself are sitting here. Everything and the kitchen sink is gone. I mean, there are sinks. They're actually working, right?
They are. They function.
Yeah, we tested out the
sinks. The sinks are working, so
facilities.
It's like Jurassic Park. Dr. Grant's on the phone. The sinks are working.
I feel like we should set the scene for people a little bit. Like an hour ago, we just drove down the locker room hallway in our cars, all three of our cars.
Have we figured out how we're going to get them out, though? I don't have a rear camera on Ford Fusion.
I brought the two things that airline guys, the runway guys, use to back the planes out of the tarmac. So we should be good getting out. But that is, again, for those of you who want to paint the picture in your own head, just, you know, every picture you've ever seen in publication about this place, you know, just imagine everything being gone. There's like, you can tell where stuff is. Again, we're talking about fixtures that have been on the walls for 40 years, and now that everything's removed, it's all shadows, and it's all very eerie. It's all very strange. Chris Chelios' sauna is still mostly intact, which we all know Chris Chelios' physique. Like, the guy stays in shape, so like, if anything has relation to him, it would be a sauna.
You think that'll be like the last thing standing? Yeah, the wood from the Chelios sauna.
The bulldozing guys come through and they just get like, there's this like thing we can't just roll over. What is it? And there it is in perfect pristine condition, ready to go. So you know, we wanted to take this opportunity to kind of just chat about some recent topics that have happened. I want to lead off with the Hall of Fame class, which I don't know if you guys are aware, but really the most deserving guy is getting in, which is currently our commissioner.
I knew where you were going with this, Jay.
So, but, you know, not to, you know, be really weird about, you know, how it's absurd that someone's getting in and then we're on the eve of, you know, another lockout. But, you know, is there anything that, from a Red Wings perspective, I don't know who else is really technically waiting to get in, right? There's not really too many folks, but, you know, now we're sitting in this locker room and we have a chance to reflect on, you know, those who did go in. So, you know, Craig, I think, who are you sitting in front of right now? Is this supposed to be Yzerman or Lidstrom where you're?
I would be in the stall. I'm trying to think of the most recent. I'm pretty close to where Pavel Datsyuk would have changed. That's like, I'm basically in his stall if he had not left and the building was still here.
Right.
So, you know, I think that's an interesting place to start. If you're just keeping this very Red Wing centric, which is a mouthful, is Pavel Datsyuk, where is he in that conversation once he's eligible for you?
For me, I think he does get in. It's so weird because you talk to people where they get into their, like, they either launch into their emotional reasons why, but then their statistical reasons why. I think statistically and impact of the game and how he was able to entertain and play the game of hockey, I think absolutely, and I'm plugging our own show here, for sure.
Yeah.
I think he's definitely in. But, like, emotionally, I think I would be a lot more comfortable with him going in if there was some amends made or at least like a farewell something, because it's really weird
to the Red Wing just because of the way it ended.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, and then, you know, kind of along the same lines with, like, you know, Fedorov a little bit. It's like, you know, you wish you had like something. I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying I need a lot, but like, it'd be kind of cool if we did like, you know, like a heritage night, right? And like, hey, Pav's dropping the puck and we talk to him for a little bit and then, you know, just something. But like, we're kind of just like, okay, he left. And he hasn't really come back yet, but like he gives us shout outs or whatever. So like he knows us, he remembers us, but you know, I don't know how soon.
He's still playing, right?
Yeah. If there's anything to make it even more frustrating, is it's like, okay, so he left and he's still playing. He's just not here.
Right.
He's not here.
And he's good. Like, I saw him at the Worlds in Denmark and he's still Pavel Datsyuk. Like, he was playing for Russia and looked great. And it's funny because it is almost out of sight, out of mind. And he left the NHL, so we don't need to talk about him anymore. But then it's funny to think of what he could have meant to even this transition period for the Red Wings and giving, you know, these young players that are coming in. You know, imagine him playing with Zadina or somebody like that, where you're not bringing in Vanek or something to do that.
Yeah. I would have tremendously liked a newer version of the two kids in a goat line. You know, here's what on Earth is okay. All right, that's perfect. Thanks.
Is that a pop up? Something you don't get at the Athletic. I'm gonna plug. No videos.
Oh my goodness, that's great. I kind of actually want to leave that in, Pete. I'm gonna leave that in. It was nice. It was clean, and we're all friends here. So, anyways, before being so rudely interrupted by the
by myself.
Yeah, I think that there's something to be said for his impact on it, and I again want a two kids and a goat line 2.0, because what's weird is like calling Pavel Datsyuk, as you said, like he's still really good, yeah. Right? And then like what if you paired him with Rasmussen, or you know even once like so Zadina's supposed to you know push to come on in and stuff, so it's like all the wealth of his knowledge. I feel like that's something the Wings are.
Goodness.
I'm done. Jay. I'm done.
Just close the browser, man.
It's closed. It's done. Just
stop surfing the web while you're talking on your podcast.
Listen, I am that guy. I am literally setting my fantasy lineups as I'm talking to you guys. I have to admit it. That is my guy.
Who do you got?
No. Right. Yeah. We're not going there. Actually, my first line is I'm starting out with Ryan Getzlaff at the center. That's me, but what? How far off do you think? I mean, do you think if he just stops now, is he like the next ballot, or you? But obviously, the next eligible ballot, because it's 3 years, right? There is a waiting period. Yeah, so it's like if we want this to happen soon, we need him to hang him up soon.
So one of the things that when I'm doing an evaluation, you want the guy to be the most dominant or in the conversation for the best at his position for a stretch of time in the league, right? If we're holding it to a very high standard rather than numbers accumulation. And I think Pavel Datsyuk clearly, when he was at his best, was one of the three best centers in the game, right? And I think what always impressed me about Pavel Datsyuk was the kind of the way he was held in esteem by other players. So when you would talk to, remember that one All-Star where he was like the first pick, wasn't he? And it was like, to these guys, it was a no-brainer. They're like, Pavel Datsyuk's a bit, like, I hate playing against him. You know, the way he defends, the way he can score. And so when you talk to players at Pavel's peak, he was, in their minds, the best player in the league or one of the best players in the league. So that, to me, puts him.
Well, and I'd also argue, like, one of the big criteria for the Hall of Fame should be ways that you change the game or like, things that you accentuate the game. And him as a Deaker, I would say set the tone for a generation, maybe more than a generation, of players, especially like right at the beginning of the shootout era for tiebreakers. Some of those dekes that he had, like those are iconic.
Yeah.
So I think that to me makes it pretty clear for me. I will say to your point, especially and this is different for various leagues, but like the way that a fan base rallies behind a player, I think does tend to affect like their Hall of Fame quote unquote candidacy. Especially you saw in like baseball, like everyone rallying behind like Tim Raines, for example.
Yeah.
And if you've got a fan base that's fractured on a certain guy, and I think that those wounds heal, and especially when the ballot comes up, like Red Wings fans aren't going to hold that against him too hard.
No, because any highlight reel you show, because when they announce, they have like what, you know, a 5 minute thing, we're like, and you know, coming in, and they're going to be like, I was mad, but then I saw him turn Marty Turco inside out, and gosh, and I just can't stay mad at you.
You know, right, exactly. So I think those wounds heal, but it is an interesting point in that context.
How I don't have a great sense of this, Jay, maybe you would know better. Like, how mad is the Red Wings fan base at Pavel Datsyuk right now still?
Pete, this is actually really glad that I get to say this. Our mutual friend, JJ, at Wing It at Motown, wrote a very nice piece. He articulated his thoughts very well, and I'd like to think that maybe the way he said it is a lot of the way that fans feel. Maybe they just don't know how to express it, which is, like, on one level, yes, you love the guy, but, like, just the way it went down, like, there's just something that's just really tugging at your fan strings, and it's like, grr. Me personally, I would love for some sort of inroad to be made. I don't know what that would look like. I don't know if it's a secret meeting at Denny's to form a statement to then release on social media the next day, or, you know, or a surprise thing like, hey, like he's brought on as like an ambassador or whatever, mm-hmm. or like a special teams coach or just something. Like all of a sudden, hey, Datsuk's been gone forever, but now, boom, he's back and he has an influence on what they're trying to build here. I think that could mean a lot, but I think that people are almost, at least from what I've seen, kind of almost very middle of the road, kind of teetering back and forth. Because like on a certain day, they're like, I am so mad that he left us in the lurch like that. Like yeah, that was a,
it was a bad spot.
Yeah, it was. And like, you know, I know we've talked to people who probably have more bombastic and explosive ways to say, because they're like, oh, he screwed the deal. He's a traitor. And I'm like, no. I think it was just an awful turn of events. And, you know, whether there needs to be, I don't care who goes first, just somebody say, hey, I want to fix this. Who can, yeah. how do we make this better? And I think that would go a long way. Cause I don't think any Wings fan wants to forever be mad at him. I guess they just want that one. Cause I think what's nice about his impact about on both hockey, but also Red Wings fans as usual, was like great, like 99% of the time. Right. Yeah. So we were going to forgive him in a second. Like if he shows up and he like saves a baby from a burning building, like that's even less than that. Like I think they would be,
say, that's a pretty high bar.
So yeah, all he right. has yeah. to do to earn your all forgiveness. Is...
Pavel, if you're listening, I know. Okay. So when they read this, when they play this as the, in my arson case, like, so you said that you would set a building on fire and put an infant on there and Datsuk has to save it in order to make inroads.
It's like, hey, Pavel Datsuk is now an honorary French citizen? What? How did that happen?
Yeah.
Well, it's also interesting, though, because you mentioned, like him coming back and having some kind of role, like, whether it's, like, you know, like a development camp or something. But, like, isn't that, like, part of the thing? Like, he wants to be in Russia? Like,
he's also still playing. Have I mentioned that?
Yeah. And here is your five-minute reminder that Datsuk is still currently playing.
I mean, I know you guys want him to be the assistant coach, but, you know.
Yeah, we really
I'm talking
can't.
Long term.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
but,
you know.
Like I certainly he could do what Nick Lidstrom's doing and who's living in Sweden and scouting players over there. And I'm really not sure what Nick Lidstrom's doing, but and then popping over here and being an ambassador of sorts and showing up at games or whatever. And you know, that's having Pavel Datsuk, even if it's in Russia in the organization, is still a valuable resource to have.
Yeah, I totally agree. So.
When he's done playing, of
course. When he has concluded his time playing the sport of hockey.
How old is he? 40 yet?
Yes.
I'm fairly convinced that regardless of his age, he is aging like a wizard. He's like Gandalf the Red.
Right.
The older he gets, like he could probably just start like meditating on the ice, like hovering himself around and
well,
still.
Well, he plays that game right where he's not skating a ton, right? So it doesn't. And on the big ice especially, that's where he has the space to operate. Where I don't know if he could do it. I mean, not this is, you know, an exercise in futility. In the NHL, on the smaller rink, because the way teams back check and all that. But he
right
now, it's almost perfect for him, his situation, to keep playing.
Yeah. So may whatever fountain of youth he's drinking from be everlasting. And then just stop and come home. Just come home, please.
Homes to Russia also.
Home,
right. You do know that.
I like how at the conclusion of this episode, it's going to be just Max and I saying things, and then here's Craig as the voice of reason.
I was on board with he wants to be in Russia. I said that like 3 minutes ago. You just selectively tuned it out.
I know. It's just going to be fun to go around and look at all the different reasons why everything I say, Craig is exactly right there to just keep everybody. By the way, just want to be clear. This is a player still playing. Still playing for a team that is not here.
This is what it's like when he edits stories.
Yeah, Max sees this on a daily basis.
Yeah. Okay, so another item that I wanted to, because so now we're talking about like players and getting their just desserts. The Ducks are retiring Kariya and Niedermeyer's numbers. We're throwing it back to the early aughts here. And this is something I wanted to talk to you guys about because I don't know if there's another, and I'm making a big admission here, so I apologize to anybody else here. Paul Kariya is one of my favorite players of all time, and I think he had the absolute worst hand dealt to him.
Yeah.
And, like, I know it's kind of incrementally, like, making up, like, I just am glad that he's around the game again, because he was a ghost for a long time, which, hey, do what you need to do, bud, because, again, the league still continues to wave the not, we can't confirm or deny flag about the effects of what the game has. So, like, Paul Kariya has been through it. We've all seen it. We know the evidence is there. But, you know, I'm so glad he's around. So, like, in, as far as retiring a number for these guys, I mean, is that, you know, is there, I don't know, like, can you be happy? Because they're Ducks? I mean, like, and like, their opposing teams.
As a Red Wings
like,
fan?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I don't know about, I didn't follow Niedermeyer as much, but, like, to see Paul Kariya, I don't know. I guess I'm venting in the sense of, like, sometimes I feel like fan bases can be so negative to each other, like the infighting of, like, you can't like that. I'm like, but I like that. Mm-hmm. I like Paul Kariya.
You can like Paul Kariya.
I can like Paul Kariya. So, yeah. So just like from one hockey folk to the other, like, do you find yourself policing how often you profess your interest or fandom of somebody, or does that really just not even register?
So we have the lucky, you know, we're at a place where we can appreciate everybody on some level without repercussion. Like, you know, when you're doing what we do, the kind of check the fandom at the door, and you can appreciate Alex Ovechkin for being Alex Ovechkin, or, you know, Sidney Crosby. I was growing up in Detroit, Scott Niedermeyer in a Devils jersey looks a lot different, you know, to me than when I'm covering the sport and he's, you know, playing for the Ducks. So, yeah, I think that's one of the things I love about our job is you can just sit there and appreciate a talent without any clouded, you know, hatred or anything like that, that you can reserve for other sports that you're not covering on a daily basis.
Right. I agree with that 100%. It's really liberating. But also, like, you know, Paul Kariya was one of my first three or four action figures I had when I was a kid.
Like, really?
Yeah. And so, like I only know him through the lens of being, like, you know, from, like, age, like, 4 to, I think I was, what, 12 or 13 when you're tired or whatever I was. Like, you know, I have no inhibitions in saying I think that guy's incredible. I mean, you know, and even that's before I was even had the idea to be a journalist. Like, I think.
Tell us more about the, was it a starting lineup or?
Yeah. Was this a McFarlane special?
You're talking about the action figures?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, my dad used to have a block company. Like, so he'd make wooden blocks. And so I had all these blocks and I would kind of build these, like, arenas, and I would put on like a flat surface of wood. I had, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 action figures, and I would make kind of my all-star lineup. So I had Paul Kariya was the first one I had. I want to say I had a Jager was a big one that I had a lot. I don't know if I had Osgood or Hasek, but it was a Red Wings goalie. And I don't know if the other one was – I want to say it was Tom Barrasso. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
That could be.
I don't know. I didn't see your collection.
Yeah.
Tom Barrasso.
For the era. You're describing it to us, and then you have to describe it to everybody there. Yeah,
I'm trying to figure out who all it would have been. But, yeah, like 10 to 15, I would set them up, and I would, you know, I had these little kind of beads, and I would just, like, bubble hockey, but I could actually just, it was actual players, and I could just manipulate them with my hands to, like, try to pass to each other and whatever. Do that on the floor while I was watching games.
I love that. I didn't want to step all over your childhood.
Yeah.
But Jay, you mentioned something, and I don't want to gloss over it. But you know, Paul Kariya, the fact that he left the game and basically left on, you know, didn't want to be a part of the discussion. I think him kind of reemerging is pretty important because, you know, the concussion battle, and it's not a fun thing to talk about, or I don't know if fans don't. But I think when you have a voice like Paul Kariya talking about the impact. That can then go with some, like, really, like, if you look at the lawsuit, a lot of times it's not the big names that are getting involved. And so I think if you have a Hall of Fame player, somebody who made an impact like Paul Kariya speaking out, I think that's necessary.
I absolutely agree. And again, I think it's so weird to think back because they made a whole commercial about the exact problem. It's like, yeah, he gets rocked, but then he's back on the ice and he scores the goal. Like, you're a hockey player.
He gets blindsided.
Please like my sport, right? And then it's like, oh, man. Like, and then he's gone. And then, so, yeah, to have him back, I mean, it's like, it's everything I wanted and a little bit more. I mean, you really can't top his appearance in Mighty Ducks 3. You know, when he does the interview with the college kid who's calling the game, I mean, that kid's probably still dining out on that. They're like, hey, you know, back when I was at school, I interviewed Paul Kariya. You know, the Seton Hall Ducks, they're pretty good. Okay, so just wanted to quickly get your thoughts on a couple of things. So think of this as like maybe like a crossfire, rapid fire thing.
Okay.
So I'm just
going to lightning round,
embrace debate,
lightning round, and then
right. Embrace debate.
Okay, so does Max Pacioretty wear a Canadiens uniform when the season starts?
Oh, Max.
Yes.
You're saying yes?
Yeah.
I'm going to say no.
Okay.
I'll let you go first. You answered first.
I mean, it's just getting, it's getting there. Like, I mean,
right. Like, yeah, right.
Like, it's August 2nd.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. Timing isn't great. And I was just talking to somebody yesterday with a team. I was asking about another player who's on the trade block, and he's like, what's happening now is you expect to make these changes around the draft, and you start to think, okay, I can go into camp with our roster now, and I'm okay. And, we, you know, they don't have to use cap space. And so I think there's less pressure. You've had time to kind of marinate on it, and,
yeah.
and do you really want to give up the asking price? So I can see where just the time element of it. I just think if you're Mark Bergevin and you're Max Pacioretty, like, this is a – you're in Montreal. It's a daily issue. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, he's such a high-profile player there and the captain and whatever, and it's like – you know, do you want this to become a daily story or do you want to just move on from this? And I can tell you, you know, the player certainly would like to move on and have some certainty about his future. And he's a bit of a cerebral player and a guy he's a thinker. And I think it would just do him well to kind of know what the future looks like. And so from that perspective, there's a benefit for Montreal. There's a benefit for Max. But if you're it takes two to tango, right?
Yep. Yep. I think he's going to look great in a Preds uniform. So,
is that where you're at?
Preds? Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I think that should be the cosmic curse that Mark Bergevin has. Whatever screw up happens, that person always finds greater pasture in Nashville.
In Nashville.
What would you ask from that? I'm curious. What would you ask from Nashville for him?
Oh, well, he's in his last year of his deal.
Right.
So that's. I mean, it comes down to: are you extending him, and what does that look like? And Max is. Kind of, he's changed agents, so that's there's a lot.
Yeah, that's the other part too. That's like, okay, so you're okay, sure.
So on some, like, if you're just reading the tea leaves, there's some element of frustration with Max, like, and this would just be guessing basing what we see, but
yeah,
that something hasn't happened and
yeah,
there's somebody to blame or whatever. Like, he's doing whatever he can on his eye, and so, so yeah, there's a lot of factors if you're trading for him, but at this point.
You can't ask for that much.
You can't ask for that
Yeah,
much.
You
well,
can't.
In Montreal, and then if you're Mark Bergevin and you don't hit a home run with this deal,
yes.
You look like, man.
You look like you're carrying the plant down the hallway again.
Right. He can't have another suspect deal on his record, I don't think.
No, and especially, you know, the Tavares thing just happened. Like people, like, if you have a star player and he's going to leave, like, you have to move him now. Like,
right.
You can't get burned that same way.
And I think, so Columbus, I think, if I'm guessing who gets traded first, I'm saying Panarin does. For that reason, where they're very cognizant of this is we have this chip where we need to maximize it, and they clearly want him to stay in Columbus, but I think that's a group that is probably going to try to maximize his value when they can.
Perfect. There's some guy named Carlson that's been talked about.
Oh yeah, William.
Yes. Yeah. Is William Carlson's arbitration case on Saturday?
Yeah. Wild Bill. Wild Bill Carlson. So in actual earnestness, does Erik Karlsson play in Canada when the season starts, or is he going to be in? Is he taking his talents to Tampa?
First of all, that was the worst lightning round ever. Our Max Pacioretty lightning round lasted 20 minutes.
I kept mine to like three words.
I know. I forgot we were in lightning round four.
I wanted to let you guys go because I wanted to see if the realization was going to hit you. That was going to be great.
So, Carlson, I think he starts in Ottawa.
Starts in Ottawa? Okay.
I agree for the same reason.
Okay, right. So
I'm not going to explain any of it because I
went
over
Max Pacioretty. No, that's the beauty of the lightning round. Listen, this is the 50s, right? You just, if you say it with enough gumption and certainty, people will believe you. They didn't have the internet back then. You just say it with fervor, and then people are like, wow, he knows.
I'm
going to
add this because I can't do a lightning round really well. If I'm a Red Wings fan listening to this, you're rooting hard against an Erik Karlsson trade. Because you're rooting hard because chances are if a team trades for Carlson now, they're extending him. And he's you know, I think the Red Wings internally hope to make a splash in the summer of 19. I know they do. And he would be target number one. And if you remove him from the market, you remove Ekman Larson, Drew Doughty, all of a sudden you're like, okay, Tyler Seguin. Like, it starts to get really hard to make a split. You can have all the cap space in the room and all the new shiny buildings you want.
Yep.
But if you don't have the player, so Red Wings fans should just root hard for Ottawa to beat status quo.
Perfect. Jets. They recently signed Hellebuck. Do you think the Jets are going to continue to be a force to get further? My personal opinion is I think that they are angry and a little upset at the series that eliminated them. So do you see the Jets as still progressing, or is this a Oilers overachievement in 1 year and that maybe they're not as good as they?
I will say I like the Jets a lot. And I think they've already done their Oilers where they make the playoffs and they take a step back. They've already had that step with this group. I think we're at the point in the Jets' competitive cycle where they're going to be good for a very long time.
I agree. I think Kyle Connor is incredible. I think he's going to continue to be a very good player for them, and they're only going to add. I mean, they're at a point where I think they have a lot of room to go up.
Yep. That's a good team. Well built, patient. They got lucky when they needed to get lucky. They're in a good spot.
Yep. Okay, so, and then the last headline, Philip Zadina, Red Wing, at the start of the season.
Well, we don't have any benefit of seeing him in an exhibition game.
I know, that's what's so great about it, right? You basically have to go only on the gut reaction and the smiles on everybody's faces back when we drafted him.
I feel like I got lost in the deluge. Did we ever hear solidly whether he's eligible to start the season in the NHL?
Oh, yeah, so... I can just tell you the again, lightning round. I'm going to lightning round. It could be you asked a follow up. The Red Wings believe he is eligible to go to the AHL. I did a story on this. It's been now maybe a month, but cleared it with the league. The league feels like they have enough evidence to send him to the AHL. At some point when this comes to a head, there's going to be some pushback from Halifax. And I guess until we see that actually happen.
What can they do, like, legally? Like, what happens? Like, why is that different from, like...
I guess if you say he wasn't on loan, or... I guess it depends on what exactly...
What's the consequence? And like,
oh, what can Halifax do if the NHL...
Just be mad?
I don't know. What are you going to do, anger the NHL?
Right.
Because it's a dumb rule. Not to really get sidetracked, but...
Right.
My goodness. Like, at least have one exemption per team where you can send your prospect to the AHL. But anyways.
I think he starts in the AHL.
I think he starts in the AHL.
Okay. I think he's on. I think he makes the team. I think we're all. I think
hasn't even scored an exhibition goal. So how can you put him on the team?
He did.
I'm putting him on the team because
you're not counting the red and white game as an exhibition goal.
Oh, yeah.
Overtime.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know shootout goals don't count, but we were talking about dangles earlier, and he's got the dangles. Pete had a question for the both of you, or a couple questions. So Pete, fire away.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just for people listening at home. I'm sitting in my office in New Jersey, and obviously with two guests and you guys all being there, like, I don't want to talk over anybody. So I just want to make sure I came up with a couple questions for each of you. So Craig, first, this is our 28th episode. So I saw that you've done 38 episodes of the full 60. So I know, you know, Jay and I have learned, you know, a ton in the last year doing this. So my question is, what have you learned the most from doing the podcast, both about podcast, you know, just doing the show podcasting, but also about hockey?
What have I learned about hockey doing the podcast?
Well, I mean, what have you learned about hockey, you know, from the people you talk to?
Yeah.
And then, like, what have you learned just about the process of actually doing a podcast?
Yeah, so it's an interesting question. I haven't taken, you know, whatever it is, 38 episodes in. I don't know if I've taken time to kind of reflect on. It's really, I was actually just talking about it today. Like, I've been winging it every week. It's just a scramble. I'm like, oh, who am I going to have on? Like, at some point, I think what I'm going to have to learn is to be more prepared in terms of setting guests up, because I don't want to have a lot of repeat guests, just because the style of the podcast is I want them to be listenable for eternity for the most part. So, like, sure. How many times can I ask, you know, Larry Brooks was my guest this week. You know, we got into how he got into newspaper business and his path to the Hall of Fame. Well, I can't bring him back. I'm asking those same questions, right? So I think my biggest challenge in terms of that is going to be guest selection and finding a way to, you know, once I expand out of the circle of people I could just phone up real quick and say, oh, I got to record one today, you know, what that looks like. And then the other thing is I think what I've learned is that's most successful is people tend to want, even more than they want to be entertained, they want to learn something when they're putting an hour into listening to something. So whether that's learning something new about the team they like, or learning something new about something they can apply to their life even. And I try to, like, these are some accomplished people I'm getting on there. So I try to draw out of them things that the listener can say, you know, okay, that's something I didn't know, or I can use in my own life somehow. And I think people find a lot of value in that.
I will say, as far as repeat guests, you can bring Frank Provenzano on a million times, and it's not going to get old.
He's already got, like, the green jacket for five episode appearances. Frank doesn't count. He's basically a co-host.
Yeah, as you going to say, you might as well just tear up.
It was funny. I was thinking, yeah, having a guest back, that's really bad. No, but obviously, like, you know, like, your podcast and our podcast are two different types of shows. All right, so Max, like I said, I had a couple of questions, but I'm gonna do this one because this is probably the most interesting one for me. You know, before you came on, I read some of your article. You know, I've read your articles in the past, but I read back through to just, you know, see what you've been covering, and looked at your bio, etc. You know, so, you know, according to your bio, you know, when you were at Michigan, you covered football and men's basketball, and then now obviously you cover the Red Wings and the Tigers. And I know for me, ever since I really got into writing about the Red Wings and, you know, doing the podcast and stuff about hockey, it kind of feels like, for me, it'd be really hard to kind of have that level of commitment to more than one sport. So what are some best practices that you've learned when you're covering multiple sports?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, first of all, like, I was the kind of kid who watched SportsCenter on loop. So I felt like I got, like, a lot of kind of baseline that way. And so that helped. But yeah, like, when you're actually covering those teams, it's like, read everything. You have to read people around the league. You have to follow people around both leagues so that, like, you know, I have Twitter as an IV hooked into my veins anyway. So it helps to kind of know everything that's going on from that perspective. And you're getting, you know, that side just as a baseline, because that way, when you have conversations with people, you don't seem like you're out of the loop. And I think that's actually huge when you're talking to players, coaches, or whatever. You know, you want to know what's going on in their sport. Now, you don't want to, like, talk like you know their sport better than them. And that's probably the biggest other key, is, like, you have these access to people, and, like, the fundamental part of our job is to ask questions. And so, like, how do you get up to speed on a sport, like, without living it exclusively? It's like, you ask questions of people who are really, really smart about it. So if you have time in, you know, a manager's office or a coach's office or anything like that, you know, use that to ask the questions that, that maybe will get you to closer to that level of expertise, I guess, if that makes
sense. Yeah.
That's great. And again, it's kind of weird because I know everybody's listening. Like, when Max says he has Twitter as an IV, he means it. He walked in with the catheter and everything.
So it's not what an IV is.
It's kind of grotesque. And I know, and I want you to know that I know that I said that wrong. Yeah. I know you don't believe me. I just wanted to see if you were paying attention. So,
hey, Jay, ER is now on Hulu. You can get
that. IP Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've seen every episode of Law and Order, and I'm pretty sure I can go in and argue a case. So.
just the joke goes over both of your heads. This is great. Okay, so that's fantastic and loving things to be said out loud to each of us right now. So that was our headline segment. We believe everybody who thinks that those are the stories that we felt needed to be covered by by us four specifically. Anything else, you're on your own. Anything else, you know how to use the internet, you can ask other people questions, but that's what we thought. So this next segment, we wanted to focus specifically on where we're sitting, because for those of you just tuning in, which maybe you did literally just download the podcast and just drag that needle right to about 35 minutes in.
That's how I listen to every podcast.
Every political podcast, I always like to go right in the middle of the episode and just hear what everybody's screaming about, and then try.
Do you know what? I actually do that with the Marc Maron podcast. I skip the first 15 minutes to go to the interview.
I was just thinking that too. Yeah.
No, like, I'm sure Mark's whatever he does in the first 15 minutes is great. And the other thing people, I love getting sidetracked. The other thing I've learned people do with podcasts is they listen to it at double speed or 1.5 times. People say, oh, I listen to a full 60, but it only takes me like 20 minutes. I'm like, that's weird to me, because I must sound like
I tried it and I could not do it.
Yeah.
I feel like those are the people who have, like, podcast IV. Like, they need to just get as many podcasts.
Like, if you're listening at double speed,
Yeah.
That's
Yeah, I have also found the gospel that is the double speed.
You have, so
yeah,
you're in that camp.
Yeah, I do. There's a lot of movie podcasts that I like to listen to, but like again, we're podcasts, we're people, right? Yeah. We like to talk, yeah. And then all of a sudden it's 2 hours later and you're like, oh my God, what?
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do? But
see, I'm a car podcast listener, so yeah. I like to be able to zone out and then come back in and not have missed so much. Like if you're listening at double speed, you can get really lost that way.
Just the audio would mess with me. Like it doesn't sound weird that it's.
Oh, what's weird is it's funny because that's the exact problem I had. But when you try it, it's not bad. I mean, I can't blanket say like do everything because like there are some things like there are some comedy podcasts where like. Timing and like giving you a chance to actually process the information, it does help. I'm not saying it's like listening to an old cassette tape on fast forward, right?
It's like
oh, okay, cool. That was the entire Emerson, Lake, and Palmer that I just listened to. Great.
Are you guys too young to remember when you have the double cassette and you would hit play and record, copying one tape
to
another?
I 100% had that. Yeah,
and you could do it super fast. Like there was like the fast dub speed. I used to have one of the like a jam box. It had two tapes.
Oh, that's perfect.
Is that another word for a CD or?
I still remember. I would record songs off the radio. So I was like, oh man, I want to hear this song or something. I'd sit there for hours, and then just hope that like the DJ didn't do like an overly long intro because then you missed the first 20 seconds.
Yep, I can tell you what songs I have like the DJ talking over the beginning of like in my head. That I recorded off the radio.
Yeah. Very, very recently, I downloaded a bunch of ELO stuff, and a bunch of it was stuff that people recorded. So it's like this super British guy, like, hey, this is BB-8, I'm talking about Electric Light Orchestra, the outfit from Jeff Lynne, and it's the entire intro to 10538 Overture, and he stops talking just as Jeff Lynne comes in to sing. I'm like, that's not all the buddy. Do your own podcast. Introduce the songs on your own time. We're here to listen to music, not to talk. So, anyways, so we are sitting currently in the locker room at Joe Louis Arena. So, I'm going to say this is a, 60 by 30 foot room. Maybe even a little bit bigger than that.
Is it 10 degrees warmer than when we started?
Probably, okay. Because of the egos in the room. Right? So the residual hot air. The residual hot air in the room. So, in its current state, the locker room has been ripped clean, basically kind of swallowed by the desert, kind of like in Raiders of the Lost Ark, wiped clean by the wrath of God. There's only some carpet left. The winged wheel is removed. Only that. They didn't just take an X-Acto knife and just take the square about it. They only took the wheel, which is
it. Like, amazing. I feel like the degree of difficulty. So, like, we're looking, it's right over Max's shoulder. I'm looking at the ground and the carpet where someone actually, with an X-Acto knife, carved out the logo so you can still see the shape of the winged wheel, whereas I would have just taken a rectangular, sliced it out, and then maybe cut it later.
Yeah, or I mean, I don't.
In terms of strategy of removing logos from carpets.
Yes, I think that's something that every sports writer needs to know, because you never know if you're going to find yourself in an abandoned arena after the team has left, and right. But we're kind of sitting here and reflecting, and with Max and Craig being reporters, that means they've had to go into the belly of the beast many a time, so. From I'll kind of let you guys kind of riff on this a little bit because I myself, I'm still kind of new to the locker room game. I mean, I've been in here as a fan a bunch, but actually working it when there's actual, other human beings in here, like as far as like working the locker room, like being back in here, seeing in its current state, like what are your thoughts going through your head? Is it tough to believe that this was once, as manicured as it possibly could be room where, we're talking 18 people and a coach all, they've won championships in here. They've lost championships in here. Like this is, it's bizarre to just be sitting where all of that happens. Yeah. So how do you?
It's almost like, those movie scenes where they have like the end of times and maybe they flash for a second. You can see the city in its perfect state. And then it's back to how it really is now. I'm looking to my left where it would be the line of dressing room stalls where Nick Lidstrom would have been. And I can picture it perfect. Like, I'm looking at it, I can picture, waiting to talk to Nick and And the beautiful thing about talking to Nick is he was so agreeable, and he would talk about anything in the world, and you could basically get him to agree with any. Like, you'd be like, isn't Alex Ovechkin the best player in the league right now? He's like, oh, yes. He was so nice. Yes, he is. And then
yes, he is.
Next day you're working on a Sidney Crosby story. Isn't Sidney Crosby the best player? Yeah, yes, yes. Sidney's very good. Very, you know. And it's so it's still in a state now where I can look around and very clearly picture what was, you know, even above, like I'm looking now into the kind of the sky a bit, and there's this, it looks like, you know, two-sided Velcro where those were once all photos of old Red Wings greats through the years. And it's, you know, it's still easy for me to picture all those.
I was never in here ever. So this is my first time in this locker room because I wouldn't have been a reporter when they were playing here. I mean, I think I did one game freelance for the AP with like Larry Lage, and I was late down here because I didn't know like how fast that it was going to go. So I'd like tried to finish my story or whatever. So, but I think about it in context to the LCA locker room. Mm-hmm. And like you said, like those portraits up above the lockers, like those, they still have those.
Yeah.
And you know, this is like kind of where they have their, what's now like a state of the art, like monitor and all that stuff, like at the front of the room. Right. There's kind of, I don't know what you call it, a mount, I guess. A mount for where like a monitor would have hung.
If any of you want a collector's item, the TV mount for the smart board that was used to probably diagram all the times that Erickson cheated on plays, that bracket is still available. I'm not sure if that's going to be in the auction in September. But
is there another auction? Because I know they had one.
Right now it's
the company that's.
Correct, yeah. So right now it's just the seats, and then in September there's a bunch of other things because there's a bunch of these scoreboards like up near the suites. Those still have their signage and the and a couple other things in place. So like it is a staggered sell off. We're selling the frills first, and then now we're gonna start selling the plumbing, and then you know I assume that they'll just you know
who's buying the plumbing from this? Like no way.
You never know, right?
Well, it might just be good for scrap, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because again, there's pretty much like make
I thought
your money
you meant,
where
like, auction style. Like,
I've got
right.
this toilet. Yeah. That's my plumbing knowledge.
Do you know what's been in this pipe?
Yeah. I was just thinking of like a wife buying that for her husband for Christmas. It's like, oh, I got you surprised. It's something from Joe Louis Arena, and you'll never guess what it is.
That's right.
The way that would go is the husband buys it and he goes, "You'll never guess what we got." And she goes, "You're never bringing that in here."
This is the urinal. No, honey, no, no. But you don't, honey, you don't understand. It's the urinal. I'm sure it is. Get it out of here.
The only thing I remember they had the first auction and I remember looking at it and the only thing I considered buying was they had the entire stalls for the visiting dressing room, like the big wooden thing where And I'd done, you know, for a majority of my time in Detroit, I was covering the entire league. And so I spent 99% of my time in the visitor's room, and I just thought of how many times I sat in front of one of those stalls and you're talking to Getzlaff or Crosby or whoever it is. And so that's where my like attachment was, man, I did so much work in front of these. It'd be cool to have that in my basement.
In your office.
Yeah. But it was more than I wanted to spend. And I was like, they're like, you have to come get it. And it seems like a lot of work.
It's like, wait a minute.
Like, I got to put this back together.
Listen, I thought this was just going to be like a Venmo thing, right? Like, I thumb you the $100 and then
drive
it's
somewhere
at my
to get this? No.
You're going to have to come get it?
Have the drones drop it
I'm
off.
Used to Amazon where like, I just think about it and it shows up on the doorstep.
Yeah. A lot of people think about Amazon stuff. So I can't tell you how many books have just showed up and I'm like, I think I just said I would like to read that at some point, and all of a sudden
like
it's
three more showed up.
Isn't that terrifying though? Like how like you'll be having a conversation and then you get the AdSense for it like an hour later. Like you never.
So that's
you
true,
never
right?
Googled
that's not
it.
Just my imagination.
No, that happens.
No,
okay,
so it absolutely happens.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
All I did was say out loud, "Hey, I think it'd be cool to go to Chicago for Labor Day," and there's already ads like
Labor Day deals.
Booking.com has some express deals to set you up for the night.
Yeah.
Well, what's funny is like walking around here with it being completely stripped bare, but there's a chunk of stuff that's like still intact, mainly the bathroom, which is actually, I'm trying to figure out which episode of Miami Vice this sink would have actually been in, because it's like, it's that classic 80s, like textured gray with like little red accents and these like mirrors with like, it looks like to be like little sconces with like what I assume to be Red Wings. A branded lights and just it's really funny just imagining that like these are the you know just like looking in those mirrors it's just like man you know like Feds shaving in front of this thing you know you know, Eisman was probably just like, ugh, and then like walked away, or, you know, like here's Bertuzzi, just like I just imagine him with like a lumberjack axe, just like shaving his face because sure, feel like that's how like thick his beard was at one point. But, you know, it's, you know, I was just telling Craig Max how I was reading Chris Chelios' book recently, and it's funny to that the sauna room that he came in and remodeled when he was traded here is largely still intact. Like the bracket where the TV was is still there. Like I could bring in a flat screen right now and probably fire that thing up, and it, you know, but at the end of the day, maybe that's not the best idea because we're talking about a, you know, a wood bench that's been sitting around for forever. So, you know, mold, right? You know, I'm sure you don't want mold, but
well, it is incredible though, because like the sauna, the bathroom and the showers are probably the most beautiful part of this arena at this point. Like, they're like the least torn down. Like the tiling, like you said, like is still very much intact.
The weight room has all the mirrors still in the.
That's true.
And and like one of the pillars has a crack at the bottom. So, you know, like I'm walking in there and it's like, you know, think of all the, you know, like just all this exercise equipment and how none of those mirrors are just smashed to pieces. Right.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And it's really bizarre. Now, the one room that I had only seen the first time I saw it was in the 24/7 that they were doing for Leafs Wings.
Yeah.
And it's this, see, this is, so we're in like, so when we say we're in the locker room, technically, like the locker room is kind of like an all encompassing term. We're technically in the dressing room right now, but there's like a kind of a ready room that was off to the side, which had more of like dim lighting, kind of looked more like a cigar lounge. Mm-hmm. And I walked in there and, you know, it's just like all these, like, I imagine it was all these wood cabinets, these really nice manicured lockers where guys would come in, take their suits off, and then, you know, go hit the showers, come in, dress, da da da. So it's kind of funny because I don't think you guys have seen yet, but spray paint on the walls is a Go Wings and Go Leafs.
I did see that.
I don't know who's been in here that's what you had to do, or maybe that was like when they were.
I just assumed
that
was Mike Babcock getting one last.
He's not going to return to do the podcast.
Yeah, no, I just shot that.
You just take a picture like modeling next to him, like, hey, if you come on, we get to talk about this. And he's like, I'm sorry, who is this? Sorry, that was not serious at all.
Like that area you're talking about, I'm looking now right behind, so I'm staring at Jay, right behind him is the workout area and the sauna. And there would, in this, you know, in its heyday or whatever you want to say, or a year ago or whatever it was.
Yeah.
There was, you know, there's black curtains. So for, as a reporter, that was the area. It was like Field of Dreams. You didn't cross this line
Your
legs started to disappear or whatever. Like that was, so it was still, I was almost like trepidatious walking. Here we are in an empty building. And I'm like, oh, I'm not supposed to be back here. Like, Chelios' sauna. Like this is off limits here. What am I doing?
Yeah, I have to admit, stepping back there, I immediately thought like, what was it? I thought like either Chelios or just someone else was just coincidentally going to be here and be like, what are you doing here? And be like, oh, I'm sorry. No, this is busy. I just got pushed. I didn't see anything. I didn't see your face. I don't know what's happening here. You know, thinking like I'm about to get mafia hit. But so like looking around the locker room, is there, if we were to assign one specific moment to this locker room that could be like a defining moment to like in your opinion, like the trajectory, so this building was 1979, so and then 38 years, right? Is that 79? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So out of that, in your opinion, of all the things that this building has seen, what would you assign as the most important thing to happen in this room?
Oh man, I mean, so you don't want a generic winning the cup.
Right? Oh yeah, I just thought I'd.
I mean, like, yeah, you like to me, if you're talking about kind of the peak, it's the spring of the champagne and the celebration. I'm trying to just be creative and think of.
Were there any like great, like, I don't know this, like, were they like great, like locker room, like dust ups or like arguments, or would anybody have been like.
I'm sure there were, right? Like, and that's the weird thing about being in this, you know, on some level hallowed space that we only had access to in very controlled situations. But yeah, imagine I'm sure Steve Yzerman had at it with some, you know, whatever. Yeah. Like there was teammate fights and there was coaches like, just chewing somebody out in this room.
Somebody got told they got traded here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like, maybe that's the most, the things that we don't even know, like that. This is going to get torn down. The only, you know, these walls are the only thing that know some of these stories.
Yeah.
Like that's, I mean,
why have we not pioneered wall talking technology? Is that Why is that not? Pete, back me up on this. Why is there not any wall talking technology that's been at least installed and played? You know, we obviously can't do it without their knowledge, right? They'll know that they're being recorded.
But like for me personally, like the moment that, just as a kind of a neutral observer, I'll never forget covering was 2009 when the Penguins won here.
Ugh.
Not to, like, Red Wings fans are all cringing right
now.
Yep. I apologize for this.
Yeah.
But we're literally, like, Marc-Andre Fleury makes that save. We could throw, you know, one of these rocks off the ground, you know, and hit him. And so then you imagine what this room was like coming that close, right? And these guys coming in and Lidstrom sitting right there and, you know, pointing at it. And,
yeah.
And a shot that, I talk about him being the nicest guy. I brought it up to him for a book I did, and I remember asking about it, and he's like, oh, I don't – like, that was the one thing. Still, you know, he doesn't want to talk about the shot that doesn't go in, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's – I don't know. I think if I was going to put – I'd like to think that if it – I don't know if it happened here, so I'm just – and you guys can tell me if it didn't. The closed door meeting they had in 02 after they went down 2-0 because they had a home ice.
Yeah, wasn't that on a plane?
Was okay.
So I don't know. I don't know for sure. So I'm just, but for the sake of this podcast, I'm gonna say it happened right here.
Yeah, yeah, it happened right here. I just feel like that's the type of moment that,
yeah,
I guess I would assign, at least for me personally, like the most value to. And it speaks to what you guys are saying as well. Like, think about those the stuff we don't know, that like the closed room meetings, like, you know, think like this is the room that Babcock kicked HBO out of, right? Like this is a secret place, and things that have said and can, you know, will be lost to the sands of time. But so that's this locker room. What's funny is we'll probably take a tour of it after, but I just want to let you guys know I walked through the visitors locker room. It is a dungeon, even in its current state. I can't imagine what that place would have looked like when it was actually being occupied.
It wasn't great.
I can't imagine it was, because the at least in the Wings locker room, the toilets are fairly removed from where people are sitting and getting ready for a game. Not the case in the visiting locker room.
There wasn't a lot of secrets when you walked in that.
No, it was almost like just a giant room with no separate, like there's no doors to anything in there. It didn't look like there was any doors to anything. It was just like there were places where doors could have gone, but we didn't. It was like they were all closed.
Is there a way for us, I would actually like to do this exercise, to try to chisel and see how many coats of paint Scotty Bowman painted on the visitor's dressing room in an attempt to, like, fume them out before big games? Like, is it thicker there?
Did you bring your toolbox?
Yeah.
Like I've had people point, like, I think if we look at the lines of the cinder blocks in here, it's probably deeper. Like, if we go there, it may be a straight line at this point from the coats of paint.
Yeah. I
got a key. We can use a key.
All right, we'll use a key as a measurement.
We're all going to get our keys, and we're all going to key the place. In the meantime, Pete actually has some of our mailbag questions that we want
to
bring you guys, because, you know, when you do have people listening, I know, shocker, right? People actually listen to us. Pete, what's our mailbag fun stuff for today?
All right, so I just have two. I'm going to do the fun one first, and basically, this is a very timely question for a reason that you'll understand in just a minute. But this is like the classic Wingin' and Motown mailbag question that they would ask us on our other show, Wim Radio, which is, you know, just devoted to the Red Wings. So here we go. Would you rather fight one Eric Tangredi-sized duck or 100 duck-sized Eric Tangredis?
As a preface, Pete gave no guarantees that this question was gonna get asked today, and I'm actually very glad that he decided to ask it. So this is
a riff on the quintessential one duck sized horse or 100 duck sized
horses. Why Eric Tangredi?
Yes. Do we know why?
Do we know why Eric Tangredi?
Like, I honestly don't know. I think it started before I started writing for the site, and so by the time I was doing that other podcast, I know it was like, we would get variations on this in every single mailbag. So I don't know why they chose Eric Tangredi.
Sounds like an investigative journalist.
How tall is all bare hands? I need more information. How big is Eric? Do we have a hockey DB? I know you're surfing the web over there.
Yeah, while you guys have been talking, I've just been looking at my plus minus.
This is mono a mono, right? Like no weapons.
Just look at your Twitter catheter.
Yeah, we'd love to bring anything to this fight.
Yeah,
like,
can
I bring like my digital recorder?
He is 6'4", 226.
6'4", 226.
But it doesn't matter, because he's either duck sized or or all
right,
the,
but it would no, be okay, a six no, foot
it's
four
one,
size duck.
One 100 duck sized Eric Ten Grady's. Yeah. I don't want a 6'4 duck anywhere near me. especially if I can bring like a hockey stick and I'll just like broom them away, you know. But I think generally like your only big fear is that at duck size, even his arms strong, you know, I'm sure the guy's a strong guy or whatever, yeah, they're not gonna make that much of an impact.
No, but they're smart enough to collaborate.
To try to drown you.
I'm taking the one. Because 100 Eric Ten Grady's, like, they're going to get, like, after I sweep 10 of them away with a hockey stick, they're going to get together and be like, all right, that's not working.
Because we're talking about 100.
But okay, but is this
100
of
them? So easily 25 of them could distract Craig, while the other 75 are able to, like,
do something. But what are they going to
get steamrolled by 100 Eric Ten Grady's?
Okay, but so is this one of those deals where, like, when you shrink something, like, it retains its, like, strength properties? Like, he can't, like, jump to, like, the height, right? Like, he can only.
It's not Ant-Man power.
Right, exactly.
We're talking just the size relative to his actual
right,
size.
So like,
and his brain power would be smaller than
same.
In theory? Or same?
The brain power is the same.
Would his brain power be split amongst
the
100?
He's got a duck-sized brain now.
That's right. Right? Bigger the brain, you use more of the percentage, because 10% at that size versus 10% at this? Oh,
I might be able to outthink 100.
Right, and because they're just it's just going to be like fighting 100 ducks, only they can't fly now. Which is my biggest fear, biggest fear of the ducks anyway, right?
See, there's like different facets to this question that just like present themselves. Yeah. Because like all the information is there, but then you think about it, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, that's no.
Well, see, I'm in
the horse size.
I always
duck
come back to Army of Darkness.
I take the one horse size duck, but in the Ten Grady, because like I don't want all those horses, you know. But I think like a guy who stands on two legs. Maybe just easier than that. I don't know.
Okay. I would take one duck sized Eric Ten Grady.
One duck sized Eric Ten Grady, and then.
Yeah.
100.
You just got to deal with one thing. Like, it's just a number thing for me. Like, if I can handle
that one
thing.
No, it's not
one
duck sized.
Oh, no. One Eric.
Or, I mean, one
Ten Grady.
If you have a 6'4 duck, it's going to, like, claw you. It's going to pick you up and throw you. It flies, Craig. It flies.
It flies,
Do we have weapons? Did we establish this? Do I have anything to...
A weapon changes the game.
Yeah, it certainly does. Well, again, having recently... I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Big Hero 6.
Yes, I have.
Okay,
many
so...
Many times. In,
right.
Many
so the bad guy in that film uses Hero's technology, basically little tiny nanobots, to coordinate an attack. That's why I am more inclined to take on the Tangredi-sized duck, because what we're talking, again... 100 ducks.
Yeah.
All right. Like I know we laugh at it.
Comparison is the Big Hero 6 compared.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
They'd get together. They would form something.
Yeah. They get, like again. We're talking about think about all the classic hijinks that Kevin McAllister pulls with the marbles. You know, all they have to do is just put enough leverage under 1 foot. All of a sudden, you're falling
over. Are they
smart
enough to do that?
That's what we don't know.
That's right.
That was smart technology.
But right. But I have to say, like,
we don't know if the Eric Ten Grady's have been gifted nanobot technology to further communicate.
As this does keep going, though, I am starting to realize like the gravity of 100.
100.
Yeah,
like, that's a lot. Yeah, like because they're gonna bull rush. Like no matter even if they're dumb as hell, they're gonna bull rush. Right.
Yeah.
Like you sitting in this dressing room that was, well, you know, it's half this dressing room, right?
Yeah.
Fair to say.
Yeah, that's fair. That's pretty scary.
It's a lot of...
Like, they can block a door.
Not only that, they're talking smack at you. Mm. Right? They are talking at you.
Eric's
a
really good dude, I think.
Like, what, 100 of them, and then the objective is to fight you.
Is this
right?
To
wouldn't
the
that... Wouldn't that
is this to the death? Like, how does... Like, can I tap out? Like, what happens here?
Well, yeah, well, that's inherently the question. Would you rather fight? So we're talking
but
about...
But, like, what's the stakes of the fight? Like, am I fighting to the death?
There's not enough information.
Well, what if you stepped
is it
on
like a trial by combat?
I mean, here's actually a great way to think of it. I would take the one because I wouldn't want 100 deaths on my conscience. Like,
that's
like
that's
if
true.
Even if you win,
and wouldn't you rather kill a duck than Eric Ten Grady?
Absolutely.
Right?
Okay. That's a great point.
So
yeah,
this is
it's
really,
yeah,
wow,
you're right.
Really easy
wow, it took me
here.
Way too long to come to the objectively morally correct answer.
We all found ourselves. Today
yeah.
Oh my God.
With where we morally fall on the
yeah.
I was just picturing the confession there. It's like, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I just killed one thing. It's like, is there anything else? Yeah, there's 99 more things.
I just killed a duck-sized person.
This is,
yeah.
This cannot be good. See, the father like pulls out a notebook. It's like, okay, he's got to consult the rule book about how you atone for that. Like, okay, so 99 does. We're talking at least 50 Hail Marys. Say your rosary like 3 times a day. And
not to mention that's illegal. Like killing a duck if it's in
that's
season.
Sport.
Oh yeah,
sport.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. See,
this is just became so easy. I'm so glad we resolved this.
Any other long-time questions you need us to answer?
Pete, what's the next question?
I honestly, I'm just going to skip the next one because I don't think we're topping that one.
All right. So on the subject of which we would rather fight, the decision has been soundly made.
Unanimously.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah. So, so for our third and final topic, this is a question that's been plaguing me for a long time, and I wasn't exactly sure if there is going to be ever an answer, but I feel like with the four of us combined, we could arrive at something. There was a production line. There was a production line two. And then the Red Wings weren't good for a while, but then they got good again. So my question is, why was there never a production line three?
Wikipedia says there was, because I Googled this, and the Wikipedia says there was. Like, it was like a variant. Like, one guy, like, subbed in, and that beat was production line three.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we trust Wikipedia.
Can we get a breakdown of the various...
For those of you who are unfamiliar, the production line is a coined term referencing the Motor City, but it's also the nickname given to the line of Sid Abel, Ted Lindsay, and some washed-up guy by the name of Gordon Howe. It was, in my opinion, one of the cool, like, there is a Bleacher Report list that breaks down the other cool nicknamed things. I mean, there are a lot of other type lines, other cool, really awesome lines in the history of the game, which we can wax about in a sec here. But yeah, the production line
Where was it on the list, just out of, if you remember?
On the list that I saw, they had it ranked at number two, and I thought it was dumb.
What was one?
The number one is the...
don't look it up.
It's the MPH line. It is the line from the Chicago Blackhawks, Pitt Martin, Jim Pappin, and Dennis Hall.
But I feel like you have to factor the quality of the players in. Like, the name is only cooler when the players are like...
Yeah, and I feel like, again, being called the production line, and you have... And those three players are what the production line consists of. I don't think...
Yeah, it's tough to talk.
I feel like the article could have gone... Can you tie it into
Detroit? Like, I mean, what does MPH...
Miles per hour.
No, I understand what it is. Like,
I understand what it
is. I understand what it means. What is
catheter?
How does that tie to Chicago? Like, there's.
Yeah,
I want it to work on multiple levels.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, the reasoning for the MPH line being number one is that they were voted as All Stars in the '74 All Star Game together and were introduced together. I don't think that's.
Yeah, you're not topping
that. No, you got to do better than that.
What the article should have done is, like, maybe list them based on ratio to, you know, effectiveness of the line and then how the line can line nickname can be tied into. But so according to Wikipedia, the production line one was Abel, Howe, and Lindsay. Production line two, they swapped out Abel for Delvecchio, literally because Abel was traded to the Blackhawks. Production line two was Delvecchio, Lindsay, and Howe. And then, according to this thing, is saying that in the late 60s, there was a production line three, but it was replacing Ted Lindsay with Frank Mahovlich. So I think, that, first of all, this is the first I've heard of it.
The third one? Yeah.
The third one. Again, we're talking about the late 60s. That was prime under the Red Wings were not in the conversation at that time. I mean, that was when Lindsay... That was just before he was traded for all the...
I can tell a lot about that. I did a lot of research on that lately, if you want me to talk for the next hour about why Ted Lindsay was traded.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually one of, like, the greatest stories of all time. And again, I'll plug Craig here because I already did a neat little story tweet thread on it. He did a phenomenal article recently with Ted Lindsay. And even if you are a Red Wings fan and you know a lot about him, you probably don't, because his is a life that is just vastly interesting, entertaining, roller coaster ride. I mean, he's the catalyst for where things are today in terms of the hierarchy of having a players' union and a players' association, and it's
Don't call it a union. I'm actually referenced when I was talking to Ted and called it a union, and he's still at, you know, whatever, 92, was like right. correcting me. He's like, association.
Association, we didn't call it a union. Yes.
I'm like, so, of course.
Mr. Lindsay, if you're listening, first of all, thanks for checking if my head was okay.
Labor conglomerate.
Yeah.
And thanks for listening also.
Terrible Ted. Glad to have you on as a listener. So
that story was unreal.
So, okay, so as somewhat hosts and arbiters of this discussion, I'm declaring that this production line 3 doesn't count. So, in your fandom of this sport, basically from, you know, after production line 2 to now, if you were going to bestow production line 3 to something, who would you do it to? And if they aren't, I mean, my opinion is with the type of roster of talent that the Wings are bringing up soon, I would actually love for something now to happen so that maybe we can just christen it that way rather than trying to dig through years and years and years and stuff.
Well, I've got a lot of problems with this.
Okay. So, Craig has problems. Let's work through this.
So there wasn't a production line in arguably, you know, in the modern era, the greatest, you know, the Red Wings win all these cups recently with Yzerman or whoever, and all the, you know, Hall of Fame fourth line.
Yeah.
So whatever talent the Red Wings gather in their latest iteration during the rebuild isn't going to come close to being, you know, whatever they put together, you know, 90s and 1000s.
Sure, so, sure, okay.
2000s. So I would say it would be a disservice to the production, not to end this immediately, but if you didn't come together with a production line during that era,
yeah.
you certainly aren't going to do it in the Dylan Larkin era, I don't think.
Okay.
And I don't think you should have another production line yep. because you already had one.
Right. That was great. Sequels suck. Like, yeah. you know, like yeah. the number two worked because you were swapping in one guy. And mm-hmm. so it was like modified.
But so
like,
that, but you're saying by the third quote unquote entry.
That's why I agree that like the Mahavala shouldn't count either because like Delvecchio still, Alex Delvecchio, you right. know? And yeah. like, I don't no disrespect to Frank yeah. Mahovlich. Just, you know, like that yeah. the
if you're listening, Frank.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Frank, this is for you.
Like, you know, Abel gets traded so you swap in Delvecchio and you still got, you know, whatever. So, but I think like just those players like we just talked about, like, those make that nickname more than it was. Like it was a great nickname just with the city ties, but the actual players on it, like I don't like the Red Wings would be hitting the lottery if they have any one of any of those other three guys, like eventual stature in the game that they could put on a production line, right? Like, do you have a Lindsay Howe or Abel?
No.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. You would, so the only, if we're really playing this out, because we're on a podcast.
Yeah.
The only scenario where we could entertain it is if they win the lottery and they have Jack Hughes at center and then sign Panarin in the summer as their big free agent get. And maybe Zadina on the other wing.
And okay.
And Zadina and Hughes turn out to be Hall of Fame players.
And even then, you can't do it for like two or three years yeah, until they're all
like
stars.
A decade or
yeah.
something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like they all to be like established, like, you know, best line in the league, basically.
Right.
Okay.
But just shoot it down. If Panarin's not signing with Columbus, he's not signing with Detroit.
Well, I mean, likely, I you know, think. Who if you were going to have your choice between like which rebuild you'd want to take part in, I mean, brand new building, original six team, you know, recent, you know, yeah, it's, again, we're talking apples, and you can have your own personal reasons and stuff. I mean, I still think personally I would take the history and like, hey, this is, I get to say I played for the Detroit Red Wings, right? It's like, I don't know how many people get to say like, I played for the Blue Jackets, right?
I don't know. Artemi Panarin. I don't know. Maybe he does.
Yeah.
But
what's Milstein say?
I'll ask Dan. Good question.
Yeah. We'll follow up with Dan.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I actually had an answer, and you guys can feel free to turn it down because I feel like I found one line, and it is actually fairly recent, that could maybe be whispered
okay.
in the same line as maybe if it became production line 3, which is the Datsyuk, Zetterberg, Holmstrom.
So we have to go back in time, though.
No. Well, no, that's what I was saying. Like, oh, retroactively, I was saying, like, in the history of, like, of things that happened. I mean, don't get me wrong, you already answered the question fairly well because, like you're saying, like they did have the powerhouse
this,
teams.
This
and
line
a production
existed,
line
and nobody
called
christened
it. So what I'm saying, like if we wanted to, you know, like we could just say, like, hey, like we're going to retroactively christen that line as production.
Well, we can
line
all edit Wikipedia, can we not?
Well, I have it up right now. I mean, I've been out the last. Literally, as we've been talking, I've been typing verbatim the reason why.
Look,
the reason
also,
why we're editing the article
in support of that idea. you know, Wikipedia has the location of where stuff gets edited. If it gets edited in from Joe Louis Arena, I feel like it counts.
It carries some weight. It would be we have christened that line, production line.
It was decided in the locker room. I would say this is the most important moment.
This is the moment. Screw all the closed door meetings and all the times that guys got told, hey, get pack up your stuff, you're going to GR. Right? Like, this is the most important thing. Okay.
I'm in favor, though, and I would make this motion to the floor, of never having a sequel to a line. Like, that's what makes line names great.
Yeah.
And I, like, even with, like, so one, another great one in Red Wings history is the Grind line, and there's, like, debate on even what that exactly was. Like, you swap out, you know, McCarty for whatever.
Yeah.
And it's, I like my lines. I like to be able to say, hey, what's the MPH line? And you know it. And I wouldn't have been able to name that for the record.
Right.
But, like, you can name the production line pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I think that's a characteristic of a great line.
Well, and again, I would certainly hope that the Wings can get to the point where they can christen. Because, it may be gimmicky, but I myself, you know, miss having assigning something, right? You know, like the KLM line or the Legion of Doom or French Connection. Like, there's some, like, cool names out there. Yeah.
Is there even a good line right now in the league where you're like...
I don't think that there's a current... See, what's weird is this is the funny part.
The Vegas' top line was... They had something, didn't they?
Yeah. Was it?
What was that called?
Well, the one that... So the Penguins had theirs with Kessel. The... what's it called? The K...
HBK.
Yeah. Kessel, Hagelin. What was it?
HBK, right?
The HBK line.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was... That's probably... I'm trying to... Yep. Like, that was... pretty prominent in a big moment.
Did Vegas not have a name?
The Marchessault line?
Yeah.
I don't know if that one had a name. Yeah, there's not a French connection, certainly, right?
I guess the other part about bringing this up is, like, there's so many cool things about this game that aren't around anymore, and I wish that they would come back, and I feel like that's something would be actually kind of cool, at least now if we're talking about, like, marketing-wise. I mean, I'm sure people would get behind it because it'd be like, hey, you have a marketable thing to put out there. You put on shirts, you can say, you know, line, da, da, da. But, you know, it's kind of weird because, like, the million-dollar line, the triple crown line, like, there's all these, like, really Hall of Fame names, and, like, none of them are within, like, the last 25 years.
I'd also like to retire the kid line. Like, anytime, like, two players in their first year are together on a line, it immediately becomes the millionth kid line. So can we retire that also while we're doing
– Yeah.
But I agree, and I think part of it to kind of, you know, prescribe what the issue is. I think it's because coaches tend to put their lines together in pairs rather than trios. So they just find two guys they like together, and they'll cycle the third guy out constantly.
Yeah,
and that tends to be the preferred way to coach right now in the game. And I think it doesn't make for great line naming.
It really doesn't. Okay, so, like, I. To be honest, saw this going a different way. I thought we were going to have fun, talk about...
Yeah, we got way too serious. Like, you're asking serious, two people to analyze things
We just, like,
seriously.
Admonished you for the mere idea of this.
How dare you try and retroactively name...
Nothing matters.
The cake is a lie. Oh, my goodness. So, okay, so now that that's been put to bed, this is our... I want to wrap things up because, you know, we've talked a lot about the history of stuff here, and I wanted to open it up to you guys. Just, you know, the last game at the Joe was really just like the kick the doors out. Just, that was a really fun night. But, you know, now that we're sitting here now, you know, in a little bit more personal way, especially with...
Somebody just flushed the toilet behind you, like the ghost of Chris Chelios.
I didn't see anyone walk in here.
Literally, all of the ghosts of Joe Louis past have now decided to join us, and they're now
welcome to the show
at whim. I don't know if that's going to show up on the record, Pete, but that's actually pretty cool. So, you know, now we have kind of like this time to ourselves because, again, we're talking about the last game is this big to do about, you know, hey, it's and it for and what was so nice about it is because it was. For sure, the last game. They missed out on the playoffs. They didn't have to worry about, hey, you know, what, we're going to, what, game...
Celebrate this and win the round?
After game two of, like, an opening round, they'll decide to do all the festivities. But then all of a sudden, the series goes seven. It's like, okay, we're back, but people already ripped chairs out of the wall here. Capacity's going to take a dip. So, you know, you have this moment to look at this building. I mean, we're going to walk around a little bit after we've recorded, but, you know... If you were going to say something about this, we're just officially calling this a unofficial official Joe eulogy you know, your thoughts on the building, how it affected you, what it meant to you, and then, you know, what you, how you, did it make you a better person, just along those lines? Yeah.
Did the joke? Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. I lose 10 pounds every time. So to me, what I experience a lot of what the visiting team experiences when, like, we parked in the little hallway right outside the dressing room, and they have the names of every Stanley Cup winner written on the walls. They have the Hart Trophy winners. They have the Stanley Cups the Red Wings have won directly above the visiting room's door. I'm sure it's intentional. And I think the Red Wings won a lot of games because of that, because of this building before they even began. Like, I would talk to players, and visiting players would walk in, and they're still dressed in their coats and their suits and ties, and they're staring at the wall, and they're reading every list of every award winner the Red Wings have ever had, every cup that's ever been won in this organization's history, and they're taking that time. And there was, for a time there, and it was gone a little bit by the end, but there was certainly a bit of an awe when you walked in this building. And I think that's what's lost now with the new building. And it's not a criticism of Little Caesars Arena, but whatever that was that happened when you walked in the hallways here doesn't exist now. And maybe it's going to take 30 years of success and actually winning some games and that sort of thing. And you can't transfer that over down the block. But that, to me, is what I'll remember.
It's interesting. I was just when there was a man in here taking pictures in the locker room. He said he always wanted to come in here. I stepped out for a minute to kind of just walk around the outside. And the man, is it Peter, the man who let us in?
Kirk. Oh, the guy who let us in?
Yeah.
Yeah, Peter. Yep.
So he was like, so what exactly are you guys doing? And I tried to kind of explain the concept, and I was fumbling over my words. And he said, I get it. You're just trying to, you know, bring the spirit of one place and move it into the next. And I thought, well, like, shit, that was way better than I could have ever said.
Just got chills.
I know. And oh my God. And so I've been here maybe 5 times. Like, I was here 1 time as a reporter. Couple times for, you know, GLA games, and then 2 or 3 games as a kid. I kind of want to tell the story of the first time I was here, if that's all right. So I was a kid. I was from Grand Rapids, so we went to Griffin's games a lot. I don't know how old I was. I must have been, based on where I was going to school, 3rd or 4th grader at the time. And my mom, one day, there was like a note. I don't know if she handed it to me or if it was like in an envelope by my bed or something. But I read the note, and my mom was just kind of laying out like, hey, like, you know, on this day, we're going to go to Detroit. I'm going to pick you up from school early, and we're going to take a tour of the Joe. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And, you know, I don't know if it was at the bottom of the note. I think it was. And then the note continued, and it was like, and then after that, we're going to, like, stay for the Red Wings game. And that was, like, the biggest deal ever to me. Like, I said, I've, like, a lot of sports for a long time, but until I was about 8, it was just hockey. And I think that was around that time. And so we drove up here. We got Pizza Hut. I remember that. And I ate it in the car as we drove up. And just the way that I felt as a kid that first time they played the St. Louis Blues, I believe. And I'll never forget, like, just knowing how much bigger sports could be than, you know, Grand Rapids is a great town. Mm-hmm. And there's good sports there. But, like, a pro sports game, like, knowing how much bigger they could be. And that's what this building meant for me. Like, the last time I was here, it was for a Kanye concert. But, like, I'll never, like, that one when I was 8 will always be what I think of. Like, just walking in here and knowing everything that had happened, even as an 8-year-old, that wasn't lost on me, and just what sports could be.
Pete, you?
Whoa. Sorry, you turned way up in my ears and scared me. I've only been there. I went there. Like on one trip. So I went to 2 games the last year of the Joe. You know, I grew up going to Nassau Coliseum, which is another building that has a lot of history, and the amount of history and kind of the feeling of the building itself kind of overrides the state of the building, if you will. Like, I remember being up in 303 at Nassau Coliseum, and one of my friends put his fist through the ceiling after a goal, and he jumped up and, you know, accidentally went through the ceiling. And the next year we went to the home opener, the hole was still there. So for me, I obviously, you know, grew up watching a lot of games at Joe Louis Arena, but I only got to really go there for 2 games. Fortunately, The first game was the game against Pittsburgh last year, or not last year, but that year when they won 6-3, and Athanasiou scored the end-to-end goal where he went through the entire Penguins team. So that was, you know, that was definitely a really awesome experience to have of, you know, getting a big win against a, obviously a very good team. And then the next day we beat Montreal. I think it was like one, it wasn't as nearly as exciting of a game. I think it was 1-0. But, you know, just walking around and getting to see the, you know, getting to see the statues in the concourse and things like that. You know, it definitely was a really special place, even though, like I said, you know, I didn't really get to spend as much time as I would have liked.
Thank you, Pete. Well, the moving here, so I went to games, first as a little kid living in Chicago at Chicago Stadium, and that place was just it was exactly as everybody remembers it. It was the madhouse, and it was loud, it was uncomfortable, but you were watching hockey. And then moving here, and then this is where I moved right in between the 97 and 98 Cups. So like the buzz was there. Everybody's excited. Everybody is just like completely over the moon about what's happening. And, I've had the chance to experience this building both as a spectator, but then also as a member of, quote unquote, the working media. And it's really interesting to see like the differences in how you're able to take in a game from the building. And I have to say it's one of the last buildings that I think was able to be built to have you continually on top of the game, no matter where you were. And that's something that's, I think, is lost in all major sporting arenas right now. Like you're really far away from the action. You're really removed from what's happening. And then all of a sudden you're at ease. Then you can lean back. Then you can look at your phone. Then you can talk to your friends. You know, like then it just becomes a place that you're hanging out in. Whereas every time I went to the Joe, I didn't check my phone like the entire time because I'm, first of all, like maybe a little uncomfortable. So I'm like automatically just kind of like, oh, all right, well, might as well watch the game and take off the frustration of, you know, like my shins are buried in the back of the seat in front of me. Right. So like, but being that close to the game, like one of my favorite parts, I've only sat like two rows from the glass only like a couple of times. I mean, I know some people who've never been able to sit on the glass, but like being even that close is just like a thrill because I think the Joe was able to, like I said, get you as close as possible without, you know, obviously being, you know, on the bench. And one of my favorite moments was we were sitting on the opposing side, and we were like kind of right on the corner just before the glass turned in the corner. And it's those things where you're like, you watch the game for forever from like maybe high up or like kind of in the mid bowl. But this is the first time I'm watching it so up close. And Zetterberg is lining up for a faceoff, and like he's getting like waved over or something. And like there's this like quick exchange between him and the ref. And just like being that close, just seeing him look at the ref and say like, off, like, and then he lines up for the face off. I'm like, that stuff happens here? This is amazing. Upstairs, it's like there's no sound whatsoever, but like down there, like you hear the guys talking and you hear them do whatever. And I feel like that's something unique about the Joe. I mean, granted, yeah, if you're on the glass, you could probably hear a lot of things anywhere, but just the proximity to everything here is just amazing. And you know, as I'm walking through, now that everything's torn up, I was just telling these guys, it's in almost in no way accommodating for hockey. Like, it's not, it almost feels like it's not, it, like, they built a building and they were like, geez, how do we put a rink in a locker room and bathrooms? Like, listen, I'm just here to just put up the four walls and the roof. Anything right. else that happens on the inside is entirely up to you, but.
Well, maybe that was the secret, right?
Like, yeah.
That's what made it great was, that's all you had to do was watch the hockey game.
Yeah, and I think that's, and I wish that that's what more of the, hopefully that's what I hope that LCA can turn into. Because I, you know, granted they did pack a lot into it, and, you know, we're talking about the first couple months there, and everybody's, you know, the seats are always the big, you know, like why there's so many empty seats. I'm like, well, maybe in like the first 6 months here, it's kind of understandable because you now have a concourse that, A, you can walk around in. There's actually stuff to do on the concourse. Like, there's a bunch of, like, ancillary activities that they packed into going to the game now where it's like you almost want to just, like, buy a ticket to go to the game and just do all those things and not care about the game and get all that out of the way first. That way you can just go watch the game. But here it was like they scanned you in. you got your beer, you sat down, you watched the game. Like, there was no, you know, hey, go to the team store, da-da-da. Like, any of that stuff you wanted to do, you either did before or after. It was not...
And it had its own unique sound, too. Like, that's what I'm going to miss is like, when the crowd would cheer. There was no, like, artificial entertainment. There was nothing between, you know, it was just like, we're playing hockey here. And it almost felt like you could almost like envision like smoke rising from the 50s or something. Like, it just had this old feel to it that when the Red Wings scored a goal, it was like this roar that you can't duplicate.
Yeah. So the new place will definitely have to find its soul in a different way. But again, this building just solidified itself so well, and whatever future holds for it, if it gets blown up for a hotel or an expansion to Cobo, I mean, you know, like, being here in this moment, it's like really cool to just like sit and kind of just like take it all in. And, you know, like, would it have been nice if all the lockers were still here? Sure, maybe. But, you know, just because you take the lockers out doesn't mean the memories are gone. Yeah. So, Craig, it's at this point we have to tell you that this whole podcast has been a sham. well, at least mostly a sham.
It's still getting published.
So a couple months ago, I think you remember this, when I was saying, hey, I'm going to go to the Joe and I'm going to pick up some seats. Hey, Craig, do you need anything? And Craig replied, hey, can you check to see if there's any popcorn still left in the press box? And I didn't really follow up with him, because I did in fact find remnants of what we all so dearly and lovingly enjoyed as working members of the media. So,
oh, wow. It's a really big moment.
Oh. Oh my gosh. Is that real popcorn?
It is the real popcorn. So what I've just handed Craig, for those listeners out there, is a shadow box constructed much like entomologists hang insects, but it's four shells and four kernels of popcorn to signify the four Stanley Cups that were won in this building. Wow. And now he wanted the popcorn, so I got him the popcorn.
That's really, this is all I needed from this building. That is perfect.
We were talking about in the Tigers press box, and he was like, so I got all this stuff for Craig. Like, what should we do? How should we get it for him? And I was like, you should have him in the Joe to record your pod. And at that point, he was like, all right, well, then you got to come on. And I was like,
this is way too elaborate.
So 2 weeks ago, we're trying to pin down a date with you. And you're like, you might just have to do it without me. And I was like, that's not an option.
So congratulations. You now have the ultimate keepsake. We'll post a photo on our Twitter account of Craig holding his loving keepsake now. So forevermore, you'll have the popcorn that was schlepped up stairwell after stairwell and elevator after elevator.
I ate so much of this popcorn.
Oh.
Like, it's probably like 20% of my body weight. I'm going to save it for
a rainy day.
End of time.
Yeah, you'll break it. I forgot to add the break in case of emergency sticker on it, because there is a glass pane in front. So.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, that's just about our time here on the For Sure podcast. This is our 28th episode. Pete, why don't you send us out with our usual spiel?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, like Jay said, thanks a lot for listening. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at P Flynn Hockey. Jay is at the Roar _24. Our podcast is at 200 Foot Pod. That's 200 FTPOD. If you want to get some For Sure merchandise, you can go to tinyurl.com/FERSHIRT. That's For Shirt. And if you want to follow our guests on Twitter, you can go to at Craig Custance, and then Max is M_BULT, MAN. They're both really good follows, so definitely make sure to check that out. And so we'll be back at you in, I don't know, week, 2 weeks, something like that, pretty soon for episode 29.
So from the Joe, we say bye.
For sure.
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 It flies, Craig. It flies.
For sure. For sure.
It flies, Craig. It flies.
For sure.
Sure.
For sure.
It flies, Craig. It flies.
For sure.
Sure.
For sure.
For sure.